My name's Lee Jackson, and I served from 1977 to 1986.
Okay. What was your background prior to working in the House, and then what, more specifically, what sparked your interest in politics and running for the House?
Well, I came from a non-political family in Oak Cliff, Texas, and my father was an accountant, my mother was a school teacher. They never talked politics, but I grew up fascinated by politics, and I went to college and I majored in political science. I didn't really want to be a lawyer, so I got a graduate degree in public administration and started out to be a city manager. And I worked for 3 years for the Dallas City Manager's Office, writing speeches for other elected officials, and I decided I could do a better job myself. So when I was 24 years old, I went to work on a congressional campaign, and when I was 25 years old, I came to Austin to work as a legislator. Lee Jackson. I was very lucky to be hired as the administrative assistant to State Representative Ray Hutchison, who was quite a forceful figure in the legislature, and I learned a lot in just one session. And then, to my great surprise, he announced he was not going to run for re-election. I was 26 years old and unmarried in a district that was largely middle class, single family homes, and I decided I would run, and I got really lucky by filing deadline. The only other fellow who ran on the Republican side was 25 years old and single, so I ran on a maturity platform and won a close election in a very heavily Republican district in 1976. Under two speakers, Billy Clayton and Gib Lewis, and the times were changing, the House was different. When I first came into the legislature in January of 1977, there were still very few Republicans, about 17 or 18, and so the House wasn't organized on any sort of partisan lines, but there was a very definite conservative-liberal divide, sometimes a rural-urban divide. And the Republicans were mostly from the urban areas, but mostly allied with conservative rural Democrats on a lot of issues. So there was a governing coalition in the House of about 90 members, 80 to 90 members, that elected Billy Clayton. And my understanding at the time was that the Speaker was pretty comfortable with his 80 or 90 votes, and there wasn't a great deal of compromising. They worked on an agenda. And frequently, every day's agenda was a surprise. There wasn't notice of amendments. There wasn't a lot of time to react to amendments. The leadership, if they had their solid 80 or 90 votes, moved issues pretty quickly. And so it was quite a learning experience for me the first term. I'll never forget being appointed to the Judiciary Committee as a non-lawyer, and Speaker Clayton had thought that was a good idea. Although there was no precedent for having non-lawyers on the Judiciary Committee, and as it turned out, it was largely ineffectual, and I don't think it was continued much. But anyway, we were assigned the budgets for the Supreme Court and Office of Judicial, Commission on Judicial Conduct, and a few other agencies, and I came into the first subcommittee hearing thinking we were going to have an extensive discussion of the philosophy of the agencies. And the chairman said, well, okay, have you read it? Are you ready? And whatever consideration they were going to give it, and they were going to vote. That was my first vote as a member of the Texas House of Representatives, was in subcommittee on the budget about my second week on the job. And that's when I began to learn this was not a philosophical exercise like it had been in graduate school. You weren't going to have an infinite amount of time to do an infinite amount of research. There weren't going to be long, extended debates back and forth. This process, operating in 140 days, had to move on a pretty tight timetable. So we had to vote out the budget for these agencies to get to the full committee, because the full committee had to get them next week to the Appropriations Committee, because the Article Subcommittee of the Appropriations Committee had to act. In other words, that was one of those transition lessons for me between the textbook and the reality of the legislature. And I think I adapted. Another one was one of the nicest, kindest, wisest, most thoughtful members who later went on the floor, and he showed me in his desk, he had a score sheet. And I said, what's that? He said, well, I keep track. When I have amendments and I talk about them, I keep track of who votes with me and who votes against me. Because when they come around asking me to do a favor, to maybe compromise a little bit what I would normally do, I look and see if they ever vote with me when I ask for their help. And I thought, well, gosh, if even the most generous, compassionate, kind-hearted guy keeps score, that I'd better be a little more realistic about this. And I don't know if I ever was, but it was just one of many learning lessons. So anyway, Billy Clayton ran a pretty tightly controlled house, and we had a lot of controversy with a group that opposed much of what was being offered by the leadership. We had a faction, John Bryant of Dallas, Luther Jones of El Paso, Craig Washington of Houston, John Whitmire, I think, was in the house and in that group. They had 60 votes attempting to block what was being planned and quickly moved to oppose them. They had their own study group. So there was a House study group, but then the opposition had their own study group working to research the bills. So you had a very definite divide in the House, 90-60, and the Speaker was comfortable that way, and the 60 were comfortable in their role, which was more like the loyal opposition in the British House of Commons. They came every day to challenge, question, and oppose what leadership was trying to do. I was privileged to be asked to give one of the seconding nominations when Gib Lewis ran for Speaker. And when Gib Lewis, are we going?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay. When Gib Lewis became Speaker, the tone of the House changed. He's a different personality. He was also a conservative Democrat, but Gib wanted to operate a House on consensus as much as possible. It might be a compromise you weren't wild about, but if the result was you could have almost all the House members feel fairly treated and heard, Gib ran the House more that way. And so with almost the same cast of characters, you had a few more Republicans by 1982 or 80. All of a sudden, the House went from 90-60 to almost consensus on most major issues. So there would be things like redistricting. Redistricting is never a consensus issue, but on most budget, tax, and regulatory issues, the Gib Lewis years had very few divisions. They would come on three or four big issues every session. So I got to see in my 10 years in the House two very, very different styles of operation. And you know, both of them were learning experiences.
Or the aspect of your service that you're most proud of?
Well, let's see. I was appointed in 1979 as one of the first members of the Sunset Advisory Commission when it was first created. And I think I had earned a reputation as someone who was at least trying to be independent and fair and not just be dogmatic or predictable, to look at both sides of an issue. And we reviewed the State Bar of Texas and several others, and I enjoyed that experience. I co-sponsored one of the big ethics laws in 1979. I supported the Pivoteau property tax reform that brought a considerable degree of fairness to the property tax, as much as it can be fair, and it previously had been used for political reasons in jurisdictions across the state. Three, public education reform, which were our first big effort to try to upgrade the quality and the results of the public school system. So there were some big issues during my time, and a couple of them were things that I sponsored. I was not a gigantic major bill sponsor. I admired the people who were. I did co-sponsor the 20% residential property tax constitutional amendment that was put in place so that we wouldn't, in going to 100% appraisal, have a backlash. And that didn't last forever. We're back to debating that property tax issue today. But for at least a decade or so, the 20% exemption, because it was built into the Constitution, was not a political football all the time.
Great. And then we have one last question for you.
Well, it is good advice to represent your district and not let anyone bully you or force you to compromise your basic principles. But I guess there are a couple of corollaries. Not everything is a basic principle, and you don't take every single piece of legislation and draw a line in the sand and say that there's only one way to solve it. Secondly, I think a representative is attempting to understand and understand and vote for the best interests of his or her district, not necessarily the latest poll. People get very excited sometimes and they think that a measure is going to hurt their schools or it's going to help their farm or it's going to be the right. Edmund Burke said, owes his constituents his very best judgment, not just to hold your finger up to the wind and vote whatever 51% says yes. So just to say vote your district doesn't really do justice to the difficulty of voting for your district's best interest after you've put in your best effort to understand it and then push back against people that want you to simply do what's easy. And then I guess the last thing that reminds me of, I measure the strength of elected officials sometimes by whether they are willing and able to push back against their own supporters. If you don't challenge your own team sometimes, then all you're doing is making a game out of this. You're saying, I'm gonna choose sides and whatever my side says, I'm just gonna cheer. I look and see who's got the courage and the wisdom to actually listen to me.
Wonderful, that was a great answer. And that's our last question.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You bet.